So you just stayed up until like 2 in the morning rewriting an email campaign.
Oh, we've all been there.
Right. You were totally exhausted. You were running on fumes, but you finally hit send.
And then you go to sleep hoping for a miracle.
Exactly. You wake up the next morning, grab your coffee, open up your analytics dashboard, and the open rate is just absolutely abysmal.
Oh,
I
no.
mean, the click-through rate is effectively zero. And your immediate gut reaction thought is, well, my subject line was terrible.
Yeah, or like my call to action just wasn't compelling enough.
Right. But what if the subject line was actually perfect and you just sent it to, like, a complete hallucination?
A hallucination. I mean, that is the silent killer of so many campaigns. We inherently want to blame the visible mechanics,
The
right?
things we can see.
Exactly. The words on the screen, the color of the button, because those are things we can control in, a matter of seconds. But we are incredibly reluctant to admit that the invisible strategy, the actual targeting, was built on a complete fantasy.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are opening up this brilliantly frustrating strategy document. It's titled, Why the Campaign You Launched Fast is Already Behind.
It's a great read.
It really is, and our mission today is to decode what this source calls the launch-first bias. We're going to figure out why you, and by you, I mean, all those who have ever rushed to get a marketing campaign out the door.
Guilty.
Same. Why we are probably misdiagnosing our marketing failures, and most importantly, we're going to look at why doing the hard, invisible thinking upstream is the actual secret to moving fast. Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
For a solo marketer or a business owner wearing like 10 different hats, speed feels like resourcefulness,
Oh,
right?
absolutely.
You have limited time, limited budget, and you just need to get the campaign out the door to keep the lights on. But the source points out that the problem isn't the speed itself. The problem is what gets tossed on the cutting room floor to achieve that speed.
Right. And the very first casualty of that rush is almost always audience modeling.
Always.
It is the easiest thing to skip because it doesn't produce an immediate, tangible deliverable. Like, you can look at a design landing page, you can read an email draft.
You can show it to your boss.
Exactly. But audience modeling is purely cognitive. So the owner operator thinks, I know my product, I know my features, I don't need to write down a psychological profile of my buyer. Let's just launch.
Which leads us to the trap our sources call the imagined reader.
Yes, the imagined reader.
When we skip this step of defining specific audience segments, we don't actually write for nobody. We end up writing for a very strange composite person that we've just like subconsciously constructed in our heads.
Right. Most solo-run campaigns collapse their entire diverse potential audience into one single weird
Like
avatar.
Frankenstein's monster.
It really is. It becomes a Frankenstein's monster of a customer. If you actually dissect this imagined reader, it is usually this contradictory blend. Well, it's a messy combination of the owner's absolute best, most loyal legacy customer, just mashed together with the totally cold, unaware customer they desperately wish they could acquire to grow the business.
That makes so much sense. It reminds me of someone trying to write a dating profile when they are deeply conflicted about what they actually want.
Oh, that's a perfect analogy.
Right. Like they're trying to simultaneously attract a deep introvert homebody and like an extreme skydiving instructor.
Yes.
So they end up writing something insane like, I love sitting in total uninterrupted silence with a cup of chamomile tea right before I throw myself out of a perfectly good airplane at 10,000 feet.
And they think it sounds great.
Right, the resulting message speaks clearly and beautifully to that one weird composite figure in their head, but literally no one else on the real planet.
Yeah, and the tragic part of that dynamic is that the copy feels incredibly compelling to the person who wrote it.
Because they're validating their own internal logic.
Exactly. They read it back and think, this hits all the points. It shows we are reliable, but also cutting edge. But the market data tells a completely different story. The clicks just don't happen.
And here is where owner-operators fall into a massive delusion, because the prevailing wisdom in Silicon Valley and startup culture is all about, learning by doing,
Fail fast.
fail fast, break things, gather the data.
What's fascinating here is the sharp distinction the source makes between launching fast to gather data and launching fast to avoid thinking.
Oh, that's a big difference.
It's huge. Gathering data implies you have a baseline hypothesis you are trying to test. But if you never actually defined your audience model, if you just threw that skydiving homebody message out into the void, the data you gather from it is totally ambiguous.
It's not data at all.
No, it isn't data at all. It's just noise.
So if the data is useless because the audience is a hallucination, how on earth are marketers supposed to interpret, like, a 0.5% click rate? They just end up guessing, don't they?
Completely.
They see that low engagement, panic sets in, and they immediately misdiagnose the disease as a creative problem.
They absolutely do. They retreat to the things they can touch. It is much easier to say, you know, the hero image is wrong than to say, my fundamental understanding of the market is flawed.
I have been this frantic marketer at 2 a.m.
Oh, haven't we all?
You start frantically rewriting headlines. You swap out the lifestyle photo for a product shot. You test a totally new color on the checkout button.
Hoping for a magic fix.
Right. You convince yourself that if you just make the buy now button neon green, that will magically fix the conversion rate.
And we know why that frantic surface level fixing fails. If the underlying audience model is wrong, better creative will not save you.
It just won't.
It is entirely possible to write the single most poetic, persuasive, structurally perfect headline in the history of advertising. But if you are pitching a complex, highly technical enterprise software solution to a creative director who only cares about aesthetic workflow, it simply does not matter.
Right. They don't care.
The copy is brilliant, but it's aimed at a segment whose core problem doesn't match the promise.
It's putting a fresh coat of paint on a house with a crumbling foundation.
Exactly.
You can paint it all you want, but the floors are still caving in.
That is why The Source gives us this crucial diagnostic question. When evaluating a campaign, the question you should be asking isn't, is this copy good?
Right.
The question you must ask is this copy good for the specific person receiving it?
I want you, listening to this right now, to really sit with that. Think about your own recent projects. Have you been agonizing over the exact phrasing of an email hook?
Sweating over a comma.
Yeah, sweating over whether to use a comma or a dash or debating a subject line emoji. When the real issue, the actual friction point, is that you're sending a message designed for a returning customer to a list full of cold prospects.
If the problem isn't the button color or the punctuation, we have to look at where the friction is actually occurring. Mm. And it usually happens in the gap between the promise and the reality.
Let's explore that gap. Because visitors are leaving, but they aren't telling us why. How does mismatched intent create these silent failures?
Think about the user journey. A visitor clicks an ad because that specific ad made an implied promise. It spoke to a very particular intent.
Right.
Let's say the ad promised a quick, easy template to solve a formatting problem. But then they land on a page that doesn't match that intent at all.
Bait and switch.
Exactly. The landing page is suddenly pitching a $1,000 masterclass on overarching design theory. The visitor doesn't stick around to fill out a feedback form.
No, they're gone.
Right. They don't email your support team to say, hey, your messaging is misaligned with my current stage of awareness. They just hit the back button quickly and silently.
So the copy on the ad was actually highly effective at capturing attention.
Yep.
And the copy on the landing page might be a brilliant sales letter for that masterclass. The failure isn't copywriting. It's an audience modeling failure.
Spot on.
The ad spoke to someone looking for a quick fix, and the page assumed they were ready for a massive educational investment.
Precisely the opposite of a cohesive journey.
I see this happen most often when campaigns are built from what I'd call the inside out.
Inside out, yes.
The business owner sits down at their desk and asks themselves, what do I want to say about my product today? What new feature am I excited about? Instead of building from the outside in, which requires asking, what does the visitor need to hear right now to feel confident taking the next step?
That inside-out approach is the default for a reason, though.
Why is that?
It requires significantly less empathy and far less research. You don't have to step into anyone else's shoes if you are only broadcasting your own priorities.
Now, I can hear the solo marketer listening to this getting a little frustrated. Let me play their side for a second.
There for it.
I get it. Audience segmentation is important for Nike or Apple. But I have a tiny newsletter list. I literally have 200 people on my email list. Surely I don't need to build psychological profiles and segment a list of 200 people. I could just write one solid message that covers all the bases, right?
The source material takes aim at that exact myth. The idea that a small list is a homogenous list is completely false.
It's totally false.
Sending one single broad message to everyone doesn't mean you are reaching everyone equally. You are only reaching the people who happen to perfectly match the unstated assumptions baked into that one message.
Even on a tiny list of 200, you are looking at a deeply fractured room. Let's break that down. Who is actually on that list?
It's a mix.
You've got your loyal legacy customer who has bought everything you've ever made.
Yeah, right.
You've got someone who just found you yesterday through a glowing referral from a trusted friend. And you probably have like 150 completely cold visitors who just wanted a free PDF download 6 months ago and barely remember your brand name.
And when you send the exact same single message to all three of those groups, you aren't splitting the difference. You are failing everyone by being generic.
Let's walk through how they each read it.
Okay, so the returning customer opens it, sees you explaining the absolute basics of your service again, and they get bored. They think, this isn't for me anymore.
Right.
The referral opens it, looking for the specific high-level magic their friend promised them, but they just get a generic pitch, so they are confused.
Yeah.
And the cold visitor, who needs to be slowly nurtured and educated on the core problem, feels rushed by a sudden hard sell. The same email alienates all three.
So all of these downstream problems we face, the generic social posts that get zero engagement, the email copy that constantly hedges its bets with whether you're a beginner or an expert language.
Ugh, the worst.
The compromised landing pages that try to be everything to everyone, they don't happen in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
They all trace back to one single origin point.
They trace back to a vague brief.
A vague brief.
When the initial strategy document doesn't define the audience with absolute specificity, who they are, what they currently believe about the problem, exactly where they are in the buying process, every single step that follows inherits that exact same vagueness.
It trickles down.
It creates a domino effect of mediocrity throughout the entire campaign lifecycle.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because this realization forces us to completely redefine what speed actually means in modern marketing.
Yes, it does.
True speed isn't about skipping the audience work, throwing a vague brief at a copywriter, and calling yourself agile.
No, that's just reckless.
That is just recklessness masquerading as efficiency. True speed is being so well prepared and understanding those nuanced segments so deeply before you build a single asset that every deliverable is already calibrated the moment you hit publish.
That is the necessary paradigm shift. The output should be fast because the underlying model is crystal clear, not because the model was avoided entirely.
Shit.
And this is exactly where the landscape is changing, specifically regarding how technology allows solo operators to compete with massive agencies. You don't necessarily need a 10-person strategy team to do this upstream thinking anymore, provided you are leveraging the right tools. Platforms like Dayclerk are built entirely around this distinction between launching blind and launching calibrated.
Okay, let's dig into the mechanics of that, because it's easy to throw around terms like, you know, AI strategy. The source mentions Dayclerk uses behavioral simulation, but mechanistically, how is an AI actually doing that? How does it simulate a cold lead versus a loyal customer without me spending 3 weeks manually building out buyer personas?
The mechanism is what makes it so powerful. It doesn't rely on you manually inputting every psychological trait.
Yep.
Instead, the AI ingests your baseline product data, your industry benchmarks, and the broad parameters of your target market. It then synthesizes that data to spin up highly specific synthetic personas. These aren't just demographic cutouts. They include psychographic markers, what they fear, what they value, what their current stage of awareness is.
So it's essentially building the Frankenstein for you, but instead of a monster, it's building highly accurate, distinct models.
Exactly. And then it takes it a step further. It runs your proposed messaging against those specific synthetic personas to identify the friction points before you launch.
Oh, that's wild.
It predicts where a cold lead will get confused by your industry jargon or where a loyal customer will get annoyed by redundant onboarding information. It maps out the friction so you can adjust the copy to eliminate those invisible bounce rates before they ever happen in the real world.
It's essentially like having a highly advanced virtual focus group test your messaging across different segments before you've even written the final draft. It stops you from guessing and hoping. And I have to say, if you are listening to this right now and you want to stop guessing, if you want to start launching campaigns that actually hit the mark on the first try without burning your email list, you need to check out Dayclerk's Killer Marketing Campaigns Playbook.
It's such a good resource.
It really is. It is a completely free step-by-step system for building campaigns that convert, and it is backed by this exact AI-powered audience modeling and behavioral simulation we are breaking down today. You can visit dayclerk.ai/playbook2026 to get your free guide. Seriously, pause the audio and go get it. The URL again is dayclerk.ai heetps://playbook2026. That's heetps://dayclerk.ai/playbook2026.
It genuinely bridges the gap we've been discussing. It gives you the execution speed the sole operator desperately craves, but with the deep upstream thinking the strategist demands.
I want to pivot here and genuinely defend the scrappy solo operator for a minute, because I feel this tension in my bones.
Fair enough.
It is very easy for us to sit here in the studio, analyze the data, and say, just do the deep thinking upstream, simulate your audience. But for a lot of solo operators, waiting to build the perfect psychographic model feels like a massive luxury.
Right.
Sometimes you just have to ship the campaign to keep the lights on and make payroll. You need actual credit card swipes, not synthetic ones. Can you blame them for just wanting to launch?
Not at all. It is a very real, very valid tension, and the source material doesn't dismiss it. It highlights this genuine debate between theory and reality.
Okay, let's hear it.
You have side A, the operator's reality. Their argument is that some level of audience clarity only comes from the friction of the real world. You can theorize all day, but you only truly learn what people want when you ask them to pull out their wallets. For them, waiting to build a complex psychological model is just paralysis by analysis.
Exactly. I've launched things that I thought were perfectly modeled, and the market rejected them. And I've thrown things together on a Friday afternoon that became my bestsellers.
Mm.
The market's chaotic.
The market is chaotic, but to bring in side B, the strategist's pushback, there is a fundamental difference between iterating on real data and launching completely blindly without a working hypothesis.
Break that down. Why is launching blindly so dangerous if you're still getting data back?
Let's use a science experiment analogy. If you are testing a new chemical reaction, you need a control group and a clear hypothesis. If you just start pouring random liquids into a beaker and it suddenly fizzes and explodes, you have a result.
Right.
You have data, but you have no idea why it fizzed.
Yeah.
You don't know which chemical caused the reaction, you can't repeat it, and you certainly can't scale it.
Ah, so if you have no baseline assumption going in, you don't know what the data means coming back.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, yes. Let's go back to our low click-through rate scenario. If you launch without an audience model, a low CTR from the absolute wrong segment of people looks mathematically identical on your dashboard to a low CTR from a perfectly matched segment that just didn't find your offer compelling enough.
Wow, yeah, you can't tell them apart.
You cannot tell them apart. You must have a baseline hypothesis to interpret the signal. Otherwise, you are just burning your list and wasting ad spend to learn absolutely nothing.
And the sunk cost of that bad data is massive. Because you think you learned that, you know, webinars don't work for my audience, when the reality is that the webinar was brilliant, but you sent the invite to a segment of people who don't have the time to sit on a 60-minute call. You end up abandoning winning strategies because of bad targeting.
Which is why the false economy of moving too fast actually costs you more time and more money in the long run.
We shouldn't pretend this tension has an easy answer. Mm-hmm. It is an ongoing battle for anyone trying to grow a business. But the uncomfortable truth, and the source does not pull punches here, is that the ceiling on learning by doing is a lot lower than it feels when you're in the trenches.
Oh, absolutely.
When you are frantically changing button colors and rewriting subject lines, it feels like you are doing marketing. It feels highly productive.
It is the classic mistake of confusing motion with progress.
So what does this all mean for the listener? How do we cure the launch first bias without slowing our output down to a crawl? The source gives us a very practical, non-negotiable final takeaway. Before your next campaign goes live, before you hit send on that email, before you put one single dollar behind a Facebook ad, you must answer three specific questions in writing.
Number one, who specifically is receiving this message? And to be clear, that doesn't mean a demographic like women in their 30s.
Right, none of that generic stuff.
Exactly. It means a specific psychological mindset and current situation.
Cool. It's number two.
Number two, what do they already believe about their problem when they arrive on the page or open the email?
It's a good one.
And number three, what do they need to feel, or what new information do they need to understand before they will actually take the action you want them to take?
If your answers to those three questions are vague, if you find yourself saying, well, they are busy professionals who want to save time and they need to feel good about buying my product,
then your campaign simply isn't ready to launch. And the vital distinction here is that it's not unready because it needs a punchier headline or more expensive graphic design. It is unready because it doesn't yet have a clear, distinct audience to be creative for.
Exactly.
Getting hyper-specific on those three things, who they are, what they currently believe, what they need to feel, that is the actual version of moving fast. Because doing that upstream work prevents you from having to scrap the entire campaign and do it all over again in 2 weeks.
It is all about building the foundation before you start painting the walls. So I want to leave you, the listener, with a final thought to really mull over as you go about your day.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to imagine that for your next big project, you were completely banned from launching to 1,000 faceless clicks. You were legally forced to launch your entire campaign to an audience of just one single, highly specific, real person that you know.
That's a scary thought.
Right. How drastically would your messaging change? How much sharper, how much more empathetic, how much more direct would your copy get?
It changes the entire architecture of the message.
And more importantly, if writing for one specific person makes the message that much stronger, why aren't you writing for that one person already? Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Take these insights, grab that Dayclerk playbook we mentioned, and go build a campaign that actually connects. We will see you next time.